Well, good morning, Hillcrest. How are you doing this morning? I hope you enjoyed the omelets as you came in. A lot of fun with all that. Special thank you to Pastor Brian and Jean for all their effort, as well as all of our omelet flippers and makers out there. It was a great Sunday for that, and it was a little cold coming in there, but it was also smoky, so you know we had to deal with what we had to deal with. It's been a long time since I've been up here. I've only missed one Sunday, but I wasn't even here last Sunday. We had an emergency trip to California. Some of you are like, wow, I'd like to have an emergency trip to California. We were there about 3 days, and we ended up bringing Jenny's mother, my mother-in-law, back, and she now lives with us here. And we weren't expecting to do that, so there's a lot of changes and adjustments for our family. You will see her, well, if you look carefully, she's about 5 foot tall. But you'll see her around here in the weeks to come as she heals up and gets better and is able to come. But just some adjustments for us. And then this week I decided to pass a kidney stone. So it's been one of those interesting weeks. And as we were getting ready for this message, really had a burden on my heart. It seems like there's been things that have kind of gotten in the way all along the way. And then even in first service, my lapel microphone died in the middle of service and like dead. But we are committed to getting this message out because I really believe there's something here today that is really can be revolutionary, transformational, incredibly helpful in our life and in our journey. And in this Pastor Choice series, that's what we get to do on our Pastor Choice Sunday. We get to choose whatever we want to teach on. I know that some of you might also think, well, it seems like Pastor Doug, you get like 52 weeks a year to choose whatever you want. But really the way our teaching calendar works is we don't just teach things I want to teach. We don't teach my spiritual life, my devotional journey. We teach things that I do or don't want to teach, but that we need for the entire congregation. And so there's a real balance in all that we teach. But during this month of Pastor's Choice, we're not tied to a series or anything specific. We just kind of get to teach what's on our hearts. And that's definitely what I want to do today with labels. Now with labels are there to help us identify what something is. For example, you might have you might be concerned about what's in a product or how a product might have been, you know, developed or tested. Some people say, you know, I want to be sure that there's no animal testing done on the product that I have. So there'd be a label like this. These t-shirts were tested on animals. They didn't fit. Might not be what you're thinking with animal testing. By the way, the labels that I'm showing you today are all 100% true, real labels that are in clothing. In fact, a lot of people have mentioned that in your normal wardrobe, you have some really strange things written on the label purposely. And, you know, whether it's the company's choice or just certain employees that get a hold of these label makers and change them, nobody reads these. But if you do, you might be surprised. So check your labels. But yeah, animal testing. Sometimes when you get something, you need to know what, like, the label tells you what to do with it. Like, let's say you're going to store it, and it'll say, remove batteries before you store, or something like that. Here's a label that gives you an idea of what to do with it. Remove child before washing. I am interested in what happened that made a corporate policy write that label out. But apparently with their clothing, you have to remove the kid before you wash it. Or maybe you want to know how to care for your product. At my house, I do laundry often, and when I do the laundry, I seem to always figure out how to wreck something of my wife's along the way. With women's clothing, it seems like it should come with better instructions because some of my wife's things require it to be washed a certain way, and then some dried or not dried, or some dried 5 minutes, and then afterwards it hangs on a hanger, and then you have to like flap your arms at it, and it has to be on a certain kind of hanger because it does something to the show. The list is so extensive, I just pop it in the dryer. And that doesn't work out too well for me. But here's some care instructions. Machine wash cold, tumble dry. For worse results, drag through puddle behind car, blow dry on roof rack. That'd be not as good of results, apparently. Even medications have labels. lots of information on medication and their labeling. So if you have at your house or you ever buy Pepcid AC, go ahead and take a look at the label because this is what's on Pepcid AC. If you're overweight, lose weight. just mean is what that is. It's like, no duh. And why is that a thing? Okay, well, apparently that's a thing for Pepcid AC. When I've done traveling, especially outside of the United States or other countries, you'll find there's a lot of knockoffs of different things. And when I was in California, there were things that we were looking for there that aren't there that we're used to having here in the Midwest. But you always need to be careful of the knockoff. Sometimes it's just a letter or just, you know, a little thing here or there. I don't know how they get away with it, like how that's legal. But if you're looking for a McDonald's and you came to this place, you might not get the Big Mac you're thinking of. All Donald fast food. So I don't even think I'd eat anything at a place like that. But labels tell us what something is, and that's the point of a label. And the thing is that you and I have received labels. Some of these labels are self-induced labels. In other words, we give them to ourselves. Other labels that we have been given to us by other people, and either groups of people agree on that label, and that's how it sticks, or we hear that label, and we internalize it. And when these labels are negative things, I'd like to say that the labels people give us are all positive, but they are not. And I'd like to think that the labels we give ourselves are positive all the time, but they're not. And the negative labels that we give ourselves and the negative labels that are given to us that we receive, that we take in, damage our path, our journey, and where we're going in life. They start to direct or dictate what we do. We start to change behaviors. We start to change things that we do, ways that we look, ways that we behave, based upon these labels that have been given to us or these labels that we have taken on. And they can be very, very damaging. Some labels are more benign. Each one of you is either a son or a daughter. That's a label you have. Others of you may have a label of being married, or you have the label of being divorced, or Christian, or agnostic, or the label of being an introvert versus an extrovert. Maybe you have the label of being fun, or you have the label of being serious, meaning not fun, apparently. Different labels that we have. Label, again, helps us to quickly identify something, but these labels that we carry around begin to shape who we become. As a young kid, I was probably about 8 years old. I was in a fishing boat. I was there with my uncle and a couple of other men. I was sitting in the front of the boat, and it was a beautiful California summer, sunny afternoon. We were fishing, just doing our thing, and I was lounging in the very front of this 14-foot aluminum Gregor boat. Had kind of a pointed front to it with a little seat up there, and I was reclined in that, and shirt off, basking in the sun, and came time to bait my hook, and so I had bent over my tackle box there, and I was baiting my hook and doing what I needed to do to be ready to fish. And all of a sudden my uncle said, "Oh my goodness." And I looked up because something exciting, you know, anytime someone says that on a boat, you've been sitting there for an hour doing nothing, it gets pretty exciting. I look up to see what he's so excited about. He's staring right at me and he says, "Oh my goodness, you're fat." Like this was a brand new revelation to him. The thing was, is at 8 years old, I was thin as a rail. I had never even heard that term used like that, and I certainly had never applied that term to myself. And as I sat up from bending over the tackle box, I looked down at my stomach, which he was pointing at, and I could see these white lines on my stomach where, like, my skin was kind of like wrinkled over in rolls as I was bent over. And he saw that, identified that as being fat. I remember that like it was yesterday. The thing that happened after that is within an hour of that, even though it was a hot summer afternoon, I put my shirt back on. And that shirt never came off again. I mean, ever. Never again in public did my shirt come off. I swam with my shirt on. Everything. Everybody took the shirts off. I had my shirt on. because I didn't want to have someone say, oh my gosh, ever again to me. So I just covered up. Even in high school, I was playing football. 6'4", I was about 190 pounds and had a physique that you should take your shirt off. I didn't take it off, never. No matter how many times I would look in the mirror, all I saw was fat. I didn't see anything other than that. That in what should have been just an insignificant passing moment in my life was seared into me, and a label was applied to me. I received that label, and that label dictated my choices and my direction of my life. Every single one of us has labels that we've either given ourselves, someone has given to us, and we have received them. Negative labels that have negatively affected our journey. So I want to ask you this morning, what negative label has impacted you? If you turn to page 5 of your program, I've got that question on there for you. And there, next to that or under that, jot down what negative labels have been given to you. Write down 1 or 2 or 3. Some of you might be looking for an extra blank page because you got so many you want to write down. That's okay. Write them down. Okay. What are some of these negative labels that people have given you? Or people have said things like, you know, hey, you're a doormat. You know, you're a pushover. You're insecure. You're a hothead. You're controlling. You're irresponsible, or you're average. Whatever these labels are that people have given you, take a moment, jot a couple down. Because each one of us has received these labels, and we have made a choice to receive them. But here's what I want us to do today. I want us to refuse, this is your first fill in here, refuse to let labels of the past limit God's plan for your future. Refuse to let those labels that have been given to you in the past dictate, change, adjust, or limit in some way God's plan that he has for your future. And I want you to make that choice today because you can make that choice. It's hard to make that choice. We don't even always want to make that choice, but you can make that choice. You see, sometimes we think that if we somehow let go of these past things that we've done and not let them impact our lives today or our future, we feel like we're somehow diminishing the negative impact that the choices we've made and how those have affected people. It's like we're diminishing that by letting go of it. Sometimes we hold on to these things as a way of having penance or a way of punishing ourselves for our past behavior. And it feels like we are not being sincere or responsible if we let go of that today, because it's as if we're minimizing the damage that we've done in the past or the hurt that we've caused. So we have a very hard time forgiving ourselves for the past because we feel like somehow we have to hang on to it. And I want to encourage you today to let go of those negative labels that people have given you. Whether they're things that you have done that brought that label on, or whether they're things that someone gave to you or said to you or did to you that had nothing to do with a choice that you made. But to stop letting those labels dictate where you're going and change the course of the plan that God has for your future. So I want to start today by looking at what Paul had to say to a church in Corinth, which is very much like our church, and this is what he had to say. In 2 Corinthians 5:17, he said, "This means that anyone who belongs to Christ has become a new person. The old life is gone, and a new life has begun." So he talks about, you know, when you come to Christ, when you are a follower of Christ, you are a new person, and all the old stuff is gone. In fact, forgiveness from God is perfect. His forgiveness is complete. Talks about it as you know, we are to our sin after forgiveness as far as the east is from the west, which is, of course, an eternal distance. Or talks about the deepest depths of the ocean, that we are removed from that sin. It no longer affects us. We are no longer guilty of it. We are no longer bound by it. And God is not looking for us to live out some kind of sentence. When he forgives, he forgives. And all that's required of a follower of Christ to be forgiven is to ask to be forgiven. And we are forgiven. The past is not counted against you. It doesn't mean that you don't care about the hurts that you caused in the past. It doesn't mean that you don't want to learn from that and do something different. But it does mean you don't hold that negative consequence against yourself that negatively affects the direction you're going and your future, because you continue to see yourself as this person who has failed, or this person who is someone who is not trustworthy, or this person who is, you fill in the label gap that people give. God sees you differently than you see yourself. And over the past couple of years, I've been doing a tremendous amount of work on this. It's been almost a single focus of mine for the last couple of years, is trying to work through these things because of the things that have been said to me in the past that I have taken on and didn't realize how much I was owning these labels that people had given me. And figuring out how to let those go, how to shed those, how to reject those labels and see myself the way God sees me and not the way that the world sees me. Or not see myself the way Satan continues to influence or try to get me to see myself in an unhealthy way and not in the way that God sees me as pure and blameless and forgiven and loved. That is the new truth that I live in. You see, God sees us differently than we see ourselves. And I want to share a couple of insights that have helped me that hopefully will help you. The first is this. Again, another fill-in is that God will give you a new name. When you come to faith in Jesus Christ, he gives you a new name. And you hear this in the scriptures, and a lot of people wonder, what does this mean? He gives you a new name. What is this new name that we get? Look at what the Old Testament prophet Isaiah says in Isaiah 62:2. He says, "And you will be given a new name by the Lord's own mouth." And many of us have been believing the names and the labels given to us by the created in our world. But it's more important what the Creator has to say. We believe what the created says about us, but do we believe the things that the Creator says about us? And as a follower of Jesus Christ, you have been given a new name. This is a new name, a new label, a new title. And today, if you got anything out of today, I'm hoping that you will hear what that name is. What is the new name that God has given you? As a follower of Christ, what new name has he given you? What is the new name that he has for you? Throughout the Bible, God changes people's names. You think of Abram and Sarai. I couldn't have children. They were labeled barren. They were labeled childless. God had a plan for them. That plan wasn't coming to fruition. So they could have been labeled failure, falling short, missing the mark. They were not living up to this call that God had for them because they could not produce a child. But what did God say? God changed their name, called them Abraham and Sarah, which meant parents of a nation, and gave them the miracle of a son. But God is the one that changed their name, changed their future, changed his ultimate purpose for their lives was revealed through their name change. You think of the biblical character Jacob. Jacob, early on in the biblical history, his name was known as, or the label that he had was Jacob the Deceiver. What a terrible label to have. And he deceived. But God gave him a new name. What did God turn Jacob's name to? Israel, that's right. Israel isn't just a country. Israel isn't just a nation of people. Israel was the name of this guy. His name was Jacob. God changed his name to Israel. And through Israel, the 12 tribes in the beginning of this nation that was born out of the promise to Abraham lived out through Jacob. In fact, sometimes when people say, you know, here are the 12 tribes of Israel, they think the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel. You need to hear it like it is. It's the 12 tribes of a dude named Israel. His name is Jacob. Those are his 12 sons, became the 12 tribes of the nation that was named after this person that God changed the name of. Israel, a father of nations. Even Gideon in the Bible, I think of the story of Gideon. I mean, he was labeled insignificant. And God changed Gideon's name to Mighty Warrior. He didn't think he could measure up. He didn't think he could do the things that God asked him to do. And in his obedience, God called him a mighty warrior. What name has God given you? What's the new name he's given you? If you're an addict today, the world has labeled you. Maybe your family has labeled you. Your friends have labeled you. They've labeled you things like weak and broken and hopeless, maybe untrustworthy. But what does God call you? What is God's name for the addict? Overcomer. Maybe you're having trouble in relationships. Maybe you've been through a divorce. Maybe an estrangement of some kind with a family member. It's a very painful situation. Well, the world would call you damaged goods or unlovable or undeserving of goodness. What does God say to those that struggle in relationship? He calls you loved and he calls you worthy. Many of us struggle with past decisions, especially those that have hurt other people, decisions that have caused other people pain and have even negatively affected their lives. The world calls those people bad and evil and even unfit. But what does God call the one who makes poor decisions? He calls them forgiven. And he calls them not guilty. All of us, I think, in some ways, struggle with the label of not measuring up. I'm just not where I should be at this point in my life. Things aren't going the direction I wanted it to go. I don't think I'm doing a good job raising my kids. I'm not a good wife. I'm not a good husband. My career, I'm just not where things should be. I'm not measuring up. I'm not meeting the standard. And the world would say that you are a failure. And that you are unable. Maybe that you're dumb, uneducated, or stupid. Maybe the world would say you're irresponsible. But what does God say? He says you are capable. You are able. And he'd go as far as to say you are amazing. You see, what's true about you now does not have to be true about you later. The things that might be true about you now, poor decisions you might make now, do not have to be true about you in the future. And the things that maybe were true about you in the past do not have to be true about you now. You do not have to let the negative choices, the negative decisions, and the labels that have been placed on you as a result of those things dictate or change the future, the plan that God has for you. Because he has a new name for you. You can say, nobody wants me, but God does. You can say, I am second best. And God would say, you're my first choice. You can say, I'm out of control. And God would say, you are capable. You are able. Or you could say, I'm scared and I'm anxious. I'm afraid. And God would say, do not be afraid. Be courageous. Be strong. Because you are so much more than these things. Sometimes we just think all we'll ever be is not enough. But God would say rubbish to that idea. He says, you are my child, and I created you, and you are perfect. How does that label stick today? You are perfect. You see, if you struggle with labels like I do, you are doing your very best right now to have your Teflon coating. Just let that thing bounce off, because that is a difficult one to sink in, because everything in your life seems to be pointing at something different than you are perfect. The people that talk to you, the way they talk to you, the things that they say about you are anything but perfect. You are not enough. And God says you are perfect. You have to figure out how to not let the labels of the past cover up so much of you that the truths of God can't get in. He says you're perfect. Are you going to believe the created, or are you going to believe the creator who created us all? What does it matter what your neighbor says if God says you're perfect? But these are difficult things to reject. They're difficult to reflect. But you are who God says you are. In fact, not only would God say you're perfect, but he would say you are fearfully and wonderfully made. He'll even go as far as to say, I delight in you. You see, we are not who others say we are. We are who God says we are. And I hope that you are beginning to hear what this name, this new name, might be that God has for you. The next thing I want to share with you is that God will not only give you a new name, but he will give you a new purpose. Our world is looking for purpose. Everybody's looking for, what is my purpose in this life? What does it matter that I'm here? What is my role in everything that is happening in the world? How do I fit into this whole thing? If you have a hard time motivating yourself to get out of bed, or you have a hard time thinking of the reason why you're going to go to school or why you're going to go to work, you probably are struggling with this idea of what your purpose is and what the purpose is of what it is that you're doing. Early on in Jesus' ministry, before he had his 12 disciples, before, you know, everything was kind of rocking and rolling as we understand Jesus to be, he was teaching. And when he was teaching, he was up near the Sea of Galilee, and the crowd started to form. And as he was teaching, the crowd started to close in, and he was getting closer and closer to the shoreline, like to the water's edge. And it came to the point where the crowds were pressing so deeply into him, he needed to create a little distance between him and the crowd so that he could project, so that he could speak to the entire group. And so there were two empty fishing boats there. And these were commercial fishing boats, and the owners, the commercial fishermen, were nearby. And so Jesus asked one of them, he said, hey, can we get in your boat, and can you row out just a little bit here so that I can teach from there in the crowds? And the fisherman said yes and let him in the boat, rowed out a little ways, and Jesus finished his teaching. At the end of the time of teaching, while he's in the boat with this commercial fisherman, Jesus says, hey, since we're in the boat, let's go out into the deep water and cast your nets there. This commercial fisherman is hearing Jesus, because obviously he's teaching from his boat. He has a good understanding, for the most part, of who Jesus is. But he also knows that Jesus isn't a fisherman. I mean, if the guy knew anything, he'd know that Jesus was a carpenter, and carpenters don't know much about fishing. But this guy knew a lot about fishing because he was a commercial fisherman. So he tells Jesus, hey, that's a great idea, I guess. The only problem with that is that we were just doing that. Like, actually, all night we were fishing right out here in the deep water and caught nothing. What do you think Jesus said? Okay, so let's go out there and cast the nets. So the guy's like, oh yeah, fine, whatever, we'll do it. So they row out a little ways, he drops the nets, and as he drops the nets, the scriptures tell us that the nets were so full of fish, immediately, so full of fish, that it was breaking the nets. And as they hauled this thing into the boat, which you'd need help from a carpenter, because a carpenter would have some big guns, because, you know, they work with big wood and not like little dainty machines like they do today. I mean, they had to move it all. Think of Jesus that way. He was buff. Okay, you wouldn't make it as a carpenter otherwise. And so he's helping haul these fish in, and it says that the boat almost capsizes. A commercial fishing boat almost capsizes by the pull in of all these fish. This fisherman calls out to his buddies who had their other boat on the shore, get on out here, drop your nets. They do the same. They drop their nets, and theirs are overflowing. Both these boats are just about sinking. I think Jesus got that kind of goofy smirk on his face. You know the name of the guy whose boat he went out of there in? Simon. And Andrew and James are in this other one. These are just fishermen. They're hearing about Jesus. Now they're experiencing something about Jesus. And then Jesus says these words to these men. Luke 5:10, he says, don't be afraid, from now on, you'll be fishing for people. They left everything to become Jesus' disciples. You see, he gives them a new name. In fact, even Simon, Jesus changed his name to Peter. And he says, Peter means rock, and on this rock I will build my church. What a powerful statement he said to Peter. But he gave them a new purpose. That the things that they knew, which was fishing, God was going to take these insignificant things, which was being a commercial fisherman, and use that for the work of the kingdom and say, now you're going to fish for men. You understand the concept. It's about providing something attractive that someone can grab a hold of taking people from their lost condition to a found condition. And these guys became incredible leaders in the church who were just fishermen. But Jesus gave them a new purpose. And God has a new purpose for you. A new name and a new purpose. God's plan that he has for you is a plan for good. And even if you're in a mess today, the plan he has for you is good. God will give you that new name, and he will give you a new purpose. You know, God called me years ago to be a pastor, but not from the beginning. I didn't know as a kid I would be doing this. I didn't know as a teenager I would be doing this. In fact, other teenagers that I knew at the time that hear that I'm a pastor today, they are in disbelief. Because they know what kind of kid I was. They know the kinds of things I was doing. And they have no connection with my story from that point to today. They just can't make the connection. I'm telling you, it was that stark of a change. But it didn't happen for me till later in life. And I started to hear God kind of calling me and moving me to this. But I was working in construction. And I was managing crews of people. And a lot of the skills that required for my role here at the church, I was doing out there, but I didn't know that God was grooming me for something else. That the thing that I was doing that ended up being insignificant was for something more significant that he was giving me. And being a pastor isn't the more significant thing. Doing the thing he has called you to do is the more significant thing. And he is calling each and every one of you. It doesn't matter if you're 3 or 93, if you are breathing, he has a purpose for you, and he is calling you to that purpose right now. And if you want to know what that purpose is, it is no more complicated than this. You open your Bible and you read it each day. Read your Bible for about 15 minutes each day, and you are going to discover God's purpose for your life. And you think, how does that work? It works because the Bible is called the Word of God. Those are his words to us. If you want to know what he has to say, you are going to have to hear his words. It's not coming through osmosis. And sure, some days you read and you're like, I don't know what that had to do with anything. But trust me, over time, over weeks, over months, daily, 15 minutes a day, you are going to discover God's purpose for your life. It's how it happened for me. That's where I first heard God's voice, is after reading the Bible and staying in the scriptures. It's how it's happened to dozens of people I know and thousands of other Christians before me. If you want to know God's purpose for your life, you need to get into the scriptures. If you don't know God's purpose for your life, I guarantee one thing that is true is you're not in the scriptures. Because he will reveal what he wants you to do through his word as we read it. So God gives you a new name and he gives you a new purpose. If you want a little insider tip here on what God's purpose for your life might be, there is a very good chance that it has something to do with the ways that you have failed in the past. You see, God never wastes your suffering. If you were an addict, he's going to use something in what you have learned in coming out of that addiction to help others who are struggling. If you've been through something like a divorce, let's say, God will use the divorce and that experience to help others through the struggles that maybe they're having in their relationships. But this is how God works. Many times the failures and the things that we've messed up in the past, God uses that for the future ministries that he has for us. The last thing is that God will give you a new future. Jeremiah 29:11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. They are plans for good and not for disaster, and to give you a future and a hope. You see, God has plans for you, and those plans that he has for you are good. Even if you have messed up, even if you're still messing up today, God has a good future for you, to give you that new name, to give you a purpose, to give you a future. Because believe me when I tell you that God's power is way bigger than your past. His power is so much bigger than your past. He is overcome, and because he is overcome, you can overcome with him. God's truth that he has about you, the truth that he says about you, is more important and more significant than the opinions of others. You've made mistakes. We've all made mistakes. But mistakes never change God's truth. And that truth is that he is for you, and that he has forgiven you, and that he loves you. And he has a new future for you. Do you remember the woman in the Bible? Her name was Rahab. What was her name? Rahab the... It's an okay word to say because it's in the Bible, okay? Rahab the prostitute, yeah. What a great label, right? Rahab the prostitute. Rahab, which one? Oh, the prostitute. Oh, yeah, that one. That's how she's known. That's how she was known. What a horrible label. As if it's your last name. Rahab the prostitute. The Bible speaks of Rahab, her name, 8 times, 6 times with the prostitute after it. And in the midst of her feeling unlovable, used up, unworthy, spoiled, just worthless, she heard about God and wondered if there was room in God for her. And at one point in her story, in her journey, God sent some people her way, and she risked her life for those people because of what God was asking her to do. And in that act, she found a place in God for her. And God gave her a new name, and he gave her a new purpose, and he gave Rahab a new future. Because when this was all said and done, she ended up getting married. And she got married to a great man. And she became the great-grandmother of Jesus. Well, I mean, not just the great-grandmother. It was like the great-grandmother of Jesus. That's pretty incredible. What a future. And God has given you a new name. And he has given you a new purpose. And he has given you a new future. I know you struggle with the labels that the world has put on you, as I do. But I want to encourage you to let those labels slip off of you. And let those labels fall to the ground. And take to heart the words of Paul in Philippians chapter 3, verses 13 and 14, when he says, "No, dear brothers and sisters, I have not achieved it, but I focus on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. And I press on to reach the end of the race and receive the heavenly prize for which God, through Christ Jesus, is calling us." The Wemics were small wooden people. And all of the wooden people were carved by a woodworker named Eli. His workshop sat on a hill overlooking the village. Each Wemic was different. Some had big noses, others had large eyes. Some were tall and others were short. Some wore hats and others wore coats. But all were made by the same carver, and they all lived in the village. And all day, every day, the Wemics did the same thing. They gave each other stickers. Each Wemic had a box of golden star stickers and a box of gray dot stickers. And up and down the streets, all over the city, people spent their days sticking stars or dots on one another. The pretty ones, those with smooth wood and fine paint, always got the stars. But if the wood was rough or the paint was chipped, well, the Wemics gave dots. The talented ones got stars too. Some could lift big sticks high above their heads or jump over tall boxes. Still others knew big words or could sing pretty songs, and everyone gave them stars. Some WeMakes had stars all over them, and every time they got a star, it made them feel so good. It made them want to do something else to get another star. Others, though, could do little, and they got dots. Punchinello is one of these. He tried to jump high like the others, but he always fell. And when he fell, the others would gather around and give him dots. Sometimes when he fell, he would get his wood scratched so people would give him more dots. We would try to explain why he fell. He would say something silly, and the WeMakes would give him more dots. And after a while, he had so many dots, he didn't even want to go outside. He was afraid that he would do something dumb, such as forget his hat, step in the water, and people would give him another dot. In fact, he had so many gray dots that some people would come up and give him one for no reason at all. He deserves lots of dots, the wooden people would agree with one another. He's not a good wooden person. And after a while, Punchinello believed them. I'm not a good WeMak. A few times that he went outside, he hung around other WeMakes who had lots of dots, and he felt better around them. But one day, he met a WeMak who was unlike any other he had ever met. She had no dots or stars. She was just wooden. Her name was Lucia. It wasn't that people didn't try to give her stickers, it's just the stickers didn't stick. Some of the WeMakes admired Lucia for having no dots, so they would run up and give her a star, but it would fall off. Others would look down on her for having no stars, so they would give her a dot, but it wouldn't stay either. That's the way I want to be, thought Punchinello. I don't want anyone's marks. So he asked the stickerless WeMak how she did it. Well, it's easy, Lucia replied. Every day I go see Eli. Eli? Yes, Eli, the woodworker. I sit in the wood shop with him. Why? Well, why don't you find out for yourself? Go up the hill. He's there. And with that, the WeMak, who had no stickers, turned and skipped away. But will he want to see me? Punchinello called out. Lucia didn't hear. So Punchinello went home. He sat near a window and watched the wooden people as they scurried around, giving each other stars and dots. It's not right, he muttered to himself. And he decided to go and see Eli. He walked up the narrow path to the top of the hill and stepped into the big shop. His wooden eyes widened the size of everything. There was a stool there as tall as he was. He had to stretch on his tippy toes to see the top of the workbench, and a hammer was as long as his arm. And Punchinello swallowed hard. I am not staying here. And he turned to leave. And then he heard his name. Punchinello? The voice was deep and strong, and Punchinello stopped. Punchinello, how good to see you. Come, let me have a look at you. Punchinello turned slowly and looked at the large bearded craftsman. You know my name? The little WeMak asked. Well, of course I do. I made you. Eli stooped down and picked him up and sat him on the bench. The maker spoke thoughtfully as he looked at the gray dots. Looks like you've been given some bad marks. Well, I didn't mean to, Eli. I tried really hard. Oh, you don't have to defend yourself to me. I don't care what other WeMakes think. You don't? No, and you shouldn't either. Who are they to give stars and dots? They are all WeMakes, just like you. What they think doesn't matter, Punchinello. All that matters is what I think. And I think you're pretty special. Punchinello laughed. Me? Special? Why? I mean, I can't walk fast. I can't jump. My paint is peeling. Why do I matter to you? And Eli looked at Punchinello and put his hands on those small wooden shoulders and spoke very slowly, because you are mine. And that's why you matter to me. Punchinello had never had anyone look at him like this, much less his maker. He didn't know what to say. Every day I've been hoping you'd come, Eli explained. Well, I came because I met someone who had no mark, said Punchinello. Oh, I know. She told me about you. Why don't the stickers stay on her? The maker spoke softly. Because she has decided that what I think is more important than what they think. The stickers only stick if you let them. What? The stickers only stick if they matter to you. The more you trust my love, the less you care about their stickers. Well, I'm not sure I understand. And Eli smiled. You will, but it's going to take time. You've got a lot of marks. For now, just come see me every day and let me remind you of how much I care. And Eli lifted Punchinello off the bench and set him on the ground. Remember, Eli said as Awemuk walked out the door, you are special because I made you, and I don't make mistakes. Punchinello did not stop, but in his heart, he thought, I think he really means it. And when he thought that, a dot fell to the ground.